Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone. And just because we are sitting in the totality doesn't mean we can't do a little bit of stargazing. Presented by BetOnline, the fine folks at BetOnline. Mark, happy Eclipse Day.
Yeah, I didn't see any stars, though.
Well, they were busy. They played last night. And then
back-to-back, right?
Yeah, I refuse to acknowledge the first half of the back-to-back, though. So we're just going to pretend. We're going to look at the standings and pretend it didn't. Actually, that's where I want to start. This is a great, Mark, you've led me right into where I want to be, in that I think the order of things matters. How do you feel now about the Stars and the week that they had, Mark?
They've won, what is it, 9 of the last 10? How can you not feel good?
Right? But now think about, like, okay, what if the Chicago game had come after the Colorado game? Would that have changed your mojo, your vibes?
I don't think so, because you look at the back-to-back situation, then you're talking about the come down after the big game, and yeah, it's to be expected that a winning streak of 9 games can't continue on forever. So it changes the narrative, but
loser talk, Mark. Why can't it continue? The slackers?
Well, it's Stanley Cup winners always just win 16 straight, right?
Yeah, they do every time.
Every time. That's how you know they're the best team.
So you're once again proving to be in a much healthier mental place than I am, because for me, having the Chicago game sandwiched between Colorado and Vancouver renders for me that game largely irrelevant in a way that maybe wouldn't have happened if it was last. And it's just, maybe it's recency bias and, you know, whatever. But the fact that the Stars looked so very good before and after helps me to shrug and say, you know what, Peter Mrazek, you're a real jerk.
Yeah, it's not the first time either.
No. What's with that guy?
Well, and here's the way I look at it. If you take a look at natural stat trick, right? If you look at the lines that produced against Colorado, it's that Ben Johnston Stankoven line. And then you go flop it over and take a look at that exact same stat as far as forward lines against Chicago, and the absolute worst line was Ben Johnston and Stankoven. And I think here this speaks to the strength of the team. First of all, against Chicago, that worst line still had a positive expected goal average.
Oh, gosh. And that game was...
The only
thing about that game that was anyway fair was that game was brutal to just, like, not win.
But, you know, if you're going to lose a game, lose to Chicago, maybe it keeps them from getting a better draft choice, right?
No.
The most painful part I had to that game was having to listen to Chelsea Dagger so much.
Yeah,
it's kind of my least favorite song.
You know, I have a shocking confession, Mark. I'm a big Fratelli's.
Like,
I'm a big Fratelli's guy, and mm-hmm. I loved that song. And then Chicago got good, and it's really impacted my ability to enjoy the Fratelli's in the same way that I used to. Just having them run that one. The number of times I've had to hear that song, let's call it Under Duress. It's just been, you know, it's like something's been taken from me, which makes me hate the Blackhawks even more.
Yeah, see, I never had the good experience for it, so it's just all negative.
But it is funny, though. So, and I think you're right. We can, I feel comfortable writing off the Chicago game. I think it is, you probably don't lose that game too many times. I think I saw something, the expected goals was like 4 something to 0.0 or 0.8 or something absurd, right? Like, you know what, Chicago, take the point, get out of town. We have more important things to worry about. I apologize, I misspoke earlier. It wasn't Vancouver, it was Edmonton on the other side. And you know, the last time we sat down, we had a, you know, what's wrong with Jake Oettinger conversation. And I'm pretty pleased to think that that's largely behind us, right? He at the time, and this isn't up to date, good and bad, right? This stat line has not been updated post the Colorado game, right? So heading into Colorado, Otter was like 6-0 with a .954 save percentage, a 1.18 goals against, and two shutouts since the debacle against the New Jersey Devils. So definite John Wick, I'm thinking I'm back vibes.
And my question is, how fully bought into this were you when you saw Walker's shot from the point go in?
I was fine with it because second night of a back-to-back, it was also one of those weird plays where it wasn't like a set screen, but there was definitely some late moving traffic. It was a shot that he maybe thought was going wide, and you know, it
knuckled too. So yeah, it's like you any goalie's going to shake his head and think he should have had it, but stuff happens.
Yeah, it's a stuff happen. I think stuff happens is, and it's also like because we started talking about the order of things, right? If this goal had happened in the middle of his slump, I think our opinion is very different than this goal happening against an elite team in the middle of an elite stretch of hockey. And then you kind of look at the circumstances and you're like, yeah, you know, you'd like to it optically, right? It wasn't the hardest shot in the world. But I think when you look at, yeah, it was a knuckler. There was some late breaking traffic, you know, like I think it's fine. And he rebounded from it. He played, you know, Dallas as a team responded well, tilting the ice. And then when Colorado started to push back, Otter was there. And I really, you know, the other two were what tips they got. So it's not like the goals he gave up against Colorado were warning sign goals, right?
Yeah, I mean, statistically, it's not going to look that good, but it, you know, it turned out to be a high scoring game. The one thing that kind of bothered me in the whole thing was you just had this third period turtle thing hanging out over you. And there was that point after Colorado pulled within one before Johnston got his little tap in there, the bit of magic from that line, where you're thinking, haven't we seen this fairly recently where the Stars are up on a really good team and they just completely turtled away a win?
Yeah.
And then it turned out not to be true.
I mean, I had the same thought. Part of it, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking a second night of a back-to-back. And I think it became clear that, you know, part of it is Colorado's an elite team, right? So first and foremost, you know, this isn't some B squad that they were playing against. Even without Rantanen in the lineup, Colorado has some high octane, especially when you get to the late stages of a close game and the bench shortens and it's a steady diet of Makar and McKinnon, right? So first and foremost, part of why you're hanging on against Colorado is because they're the freaking Colorado Avalanche, and you hang on against the Colorado Avalanche when they want to try and score a goal. But then I think as well, second night of a back-to-back, they'd had to go to the whip against Chicago to get back into that game, came up short. So this was not a team, even in the, we saw the benefit of Pete DeBoer's, you know, usage, right? But this is not a team that was fresh. And so,
well, especially on the back end, when you take a look at, you know, Lundqvist played what, 7-8 minutes?
Yeah,
he got beat up in the crease and paid the penalty for it. And so all of a sudden, you know, there were a time or two where we saw that Ryan Suter still doesn't have the foot speed to handle a team like this. He's getting third line minutes instead of second or first or pair minutes, but it's still a vulnerability.
And then if
you start thinking, well, now we're really playing 5D and Suter's getting more time, then you start thinking, here's a weakness. But yeah, they held on. They abused people. We do have some things that need to be decided down the stretch here. And good as Lundqvist has been,
that's actually where I want to go. And I'm gonna dive in for a second, because there in a lot of ways to me, this was like the classic Nils Lundqvist game. And there were two or three rushes offensively where he was very noticeable, generating chances. They didn't score. There was one where he tried to toe, maybe overthought, but he was noticeable in a good way moving forward. I want to ask you, how do you, and I'm going to ask you two questions. First, how do you, and then how do you think the coaches, how do you interpret the first goal and then the crease battle goal where Lundqvist was, you know, prominently involved in the buildup to a Colorado Avalanche goal against?
I mean, I don't see how we're ultimately going to get away from Nils Lundqvist is not trusted to play a high pressure role on this team. And so the question then becomes, Oh, Jani Hakanpaa is back skating. I think it's going to be a stretch to say that Hakanpaa just doesn't take that sixth spot, and Lundqvist will only see action if and when something fairly catastrophic happens. It's not going to be popular with a significant portion of our listeners or necessarily with all of Dallas fans, but I don't see how you get away from it.
I think the problem is, it depends on where you think, right, and how you interpret the games you're watching. If you are the type that is focused on the goals against, then you look at the sequence and the build up to the first goal where he actually engages physically along the wall, makes a pretty decent play, and just gets, you know, body, you know, the Avs forward has body position, gets back to the point, and it's not a super strong goal, right? But then the second where he just gets body worked by Duhaime, right, and not large enough, tries to control the body, can't, stick gets free, goal against, right? If you fixate on those two plays, I think you can absolutely make the, you know, mental leap to say, well, if you just body swap Jani Hakanpaa for Nils Lundqvist, both of those probably turn into nothing. The challenge, though, and this is, I think, where the debate comes in, is so how do you prove something that didn't happen wouldn't have happened, right? And the flip side to me is so much of Dallas's success in this streak, and I want to talk about the Edmonton game as well, but so much of Dallas's success has been their ability to counterattack and to just be and to apply relentless pressure from every line they have on the ice. And I think that the challenge of Nils Lundqvist is, and part of this he hasn't gotten the ice time, but the challenge of Nils Lundqvist is, yeah, you can cherry pick moments where a larger, stronger, more experienced, more physical player probably helps the team in a way that he can't. But what do you lose bringing that player into the lineup that can't move the puck?
Yeah, and I think that ultimately is the question, because you can't talk about the what ifs of what didn't happen. And Lundqvist, to be fair, had, what, I think 4 assists during this nice little streak that he's been on.
He is noticeable offensively.
Yeah, he's been contributing. And so ultimately, if you're looking at the totality of what's going on, at the simplest stat, which in my mind is wins and losses, it's kind of hard to argue and say that the team is, what, 17-1 in the last 18 games that Lundqvist has you know, laced them up? That's a pretty basic stat that's slanting in his favor.
It is. It's also very difficult because at the same time, you know, looking at the Colorado game, he played 8 minutes and got scored on twice. And so it's one of those, like, what's the cliche, right? There's lies, damn lies, and statistics. And so on the one hand, there has been production and there's been points and the team is, you know, the team won and all of those things. And that is all very true. But when the guy is playing as little as he has, how much of that can you really attribute to him?
Well, and, you know, there was another spot that I thought was just as egregious where he made an incredibly risky pinch move when the game was still in the balance, obviously fairly early on because he was on the ice. But it's decisions like that that I think are going to lead DeBoer to have Hakanpaa in the lineup.
The
unfortunate thing for Lundqvist is that risk-taking is one of the areas where he has the opportunity to create most of his value, but making that absolutely proper call as to what's a good risk and what's a bad risk is a pretty subjective thing. And it's a split second between a good decision and a bad decision, and you can get unlucky in those.
And it's so hard. I think about Thomas Harley, and there's a hindsight thing here, and it was also contractually impossible. It's also so hard to learn that in the press box and at practice. That is one of those on the job things. And a world in which Lundqvist was able to spend 2/3 of a season in Cedar Park, where some of those mistakes are tolerated because that's the nature of it. Because here's the other interesting thing, right? So this has been the stretch he's been in. You can see, you know, kind of starting March 20th, right? You can see Arizona 14 minutes, Pittsburgh 14 minutes, Arizona again 11 minutes, San Jose 15 minutes. Then you have the Vancouver game. He plays 9:14, right? Back up to 13 against Seattle. It's 12.5 against Edmonton. 12 and, you know, almost 13 against Chicago, back down to 8 against the Avalanche. And you can just, there's a pattern, right? Like, you can see his playing time really does swing fairly wildly. And it tends to swing down when they're playing, you know, when he's in the lineup against an elite team, at least recently.
Yeah.
Which I think tells you, yeah, it's, you know, there is a level of trust that doesn't seem to exist. And I think you hit it on the head, right? Nils Lundqvist at his best is a guy that's going to pinch and is a guy that's going to take chances and is a guy that's going to try to be creative and to move the puck, right? And he's going to do all of those things. And the best version of him is probably going to make some mistakes along the way, but is a guy that's going to outproduce those mistakes. The challenge, as you've said, is when that ratio gets off, mistakes happen. And this is a league, and this isn't a Pete DeBoer thing. I'm not putting him on blast, because I would argue that any coach in the NHL is going to do the exact same thing. But this is a league where teams would rather have a guy like Yanni Hakanpää or, you know, Ryan Suter, who makes less obvious mistakes, and maybe they'd rather have the floor higher than the ceiling.
Or predictable mistakes. It's a mistake that you kind of anticipate. And here, I guess DeBoer's looking at this and saying, he's going to make mistakes, but I don't know when he's going to make those mistakes. And so it's surprising, and surprises are bad.
Yeah, coaches don't like surprises, especially when they wind up in the back of the net. And I do, the other point I want to make that I think you hit the nail on the head as well is this is why Chris Tanev is so very, very, very critical. Is in this stretch, like you said, Ryan Suter has settled in his kind of reduced role in the lineup, and when he can be protected against the other team's kind of elite players, he is, in my opinion, a very effective bottom half of the lineup defenseman. He's been putting in good minutes in the role that he is. And yeah, we see him get exposed sometimes. You don't want him out there against Nate MacKinnon, but as long as everybody else is firing, that turns into a Pete DeBoer problem. And Pete DeBoer now has two lines that he can use to hide Ryan Suter, and that's much easier than when he's got one line.
Yeah, and I mean, name me another NHL team that doesn't have concerns about their third pair.
It's a cap league, right? If you're not worried about your fifth and sixth defenseman, then you're probably worried about something else.
Yeah, I mean, you can turn around and take a look at the Stars and their forward group and say the Stars are probably the luckiest team out there, because they have a fourth line that is still, you know, tilting the ice.
Sam Steele, baby. Yeah. Do you think he gets double digits? He's sitting at 9 goals right now.
I certainly hope so. You know, Steele's one of those interesting cases where I think because he came up with Anaheim, he got more ice time than he would have if he had been on a contending team. And he kind of got some time that he wouldn't have gotten up the lineup because of that. Mm-hmm. And now he's finally settling into a role that he can succeed consistently at. And turns out that he's really good as a fourth line player. And I think the same can be said for Foxa, except here the complaint with Foxa is going to be the contract.
But yeah,
every single one of those guys on the fourth line is somebody who is real solid in their role. And so, you know, the counterpart to having Suter and whoever's playing with Suter on your third pair and saying, yeah, there's going to be a weakness. You take a look at that Stars fourth line, and that fourth line is going to be pretty dominant compared to some other team's fourth line, where they're going to have a handful of players who are either thrown together or have weaknesses. And there isn't a glaring weakness to the Dallas Stars fourth line.
And the other thing, and that's the Edmonton game. Right. And the other thing that allows you to do, and this is, I think, like a case study in it, is you can, against a lot of teams, you can never take a shift off. I don't mean that, but against a lot of teams, there are personnel groupings that aren't going to score on you, and you just don't have to worry about in the same sense. And so even when you get scored against, you can build a natural moment to reset yourself, because you're not immediately facing peril on the very next shift, right? At some point, you're going to catch a breather and you're going to have a minute to figure it out while the third or fourth line of the team you're playing is out there. and the group that Jim Nill has built and the style that Pete DeBoer plays, that is not possible against the Dallas Stars. And I think we saw that against Edmonton, and that was a pretty, I mean, Dallas was getting chances certainly, but that was a pretty close game until the scoring started. And it's almost like you just look up and you're in the hole multiple goals. And it's almost like I said, with Dallas, that next line coming over the wall is like, okay, well, you know, the Robertson line gets one, and then you've got the Ben line, and then you've got the Marchment line. And then you know what I mean? Like, and then even in that context, no, if Steele and Fox, it's, you know, Radek Fox in a nutshell, when he's the guy that you're putting next to Tyler Seguin to try and get Tyler Seguin going, you've got a problem. When he's the fourth guy over the wall, playing against a team that has already had to navigate multiple shifts of the guys ahead of him, it's a whole different ball game. And you can just see the way that when it hits for Dallas, they can go from one goal to five goals, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, because the dam breaks.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I kind of look at this as a, like trying to put Jell-O in a vise. You can try and squeeze the life out of that offense, but something's going to pop out. And, you know, so you take your best defensive players and you put them up against Hintz and Robertson and Pavelski, and you absolutely take them out of their game. Well, what you going to do about Duchesne's line? And what are you going to do about Johnston's line? Oh, by the way, every once in a while, we're going to throw this fourth line at you that's just going to grind you to death.
And that's
amazing. Yeah. You have somebody like Smith who knows how to score in this league.
And we're going to see as well, I think this gets even more important in the playoffs. We've talked about a lot, right? We're going to see, you know, some of Pete DeBoer's bona fides come through. And like, it's one thing in the regular season when game plans are pretty homogenous, right? It's mostly during the regular season, it's mostly you come out and play the way that you're supposed to play, and the adjustments are fairly limited. All of a sudden, Dallas is going to come into the playoffs and maybe be able to start chasing some specific matchups. And when you have to hide your fourth line, when you're worried about something sneaking up on you, right, you can't be as aggressive going forward. But when you've got four lines and can be fairly ambivalent about who they're playing against, you can be a little bit more aggressive chasing a matchup. And sure, every now and then that might wind up with, you know, the Fox line playing against the, you know, the MacKinnon line, or the Fox line playing against, you know, McDavid or whatever. And that's fine,
but that's not even necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, because kind of okay.
how many times do you see those guys just out there cycling for 50 seconds and making that top line just expend all their energy in the defensive zone trying to get possession of the puck?
And then at the same time, right, it's by virtue of that, if that happens, the calculus you're making as Pete DeBoer is that the benefit, I would rather have, you know, thinking about, you know, I would expected goals, but I'd rather have Foxa and McDavid if that means that, you know, Hintz and Robertson are playing against the other team's third pairing. Because somebody gets to go out there against the other team's fourth line and third pairing, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, you're going to see it is like they're grinding away for 50 seconds, and all of a sudden you have an exhausted top line from the opposition. And, oh, look, here's a, you know, Jason Robertson's off fresh off the bench, and you outchange him that way. And the Stars can do that up and down the lineup. And so that's why you get this building wave of, you know, what are you going to choose to stop? Because you just don't have the personnel to stop everybody. The only way you have the personnel to stop everybody is if you have a goalie who's just standing on his head.
Yeah, chances are going to come. They had, what, 60 shot attempts against Peter Mrazek, something like that?
Yeah.
And I think if you're the Stars and you go into that game and you say, guess what, you guys are going to get 60 shot attempts. Sure, you're not going to lose that game four times out of seven. And if you do, then guess what, man?
Hockey's you got goalied. It happened. You won't be the first ones.
No, you won't be the first sad sack team to get goalied. The interesting thing to me is talking about personnel. We're talking about rolling four lines and the success they're having. We saw a debut against Chicago. Maverick Bork made his first appearance. And also, oh, by the way, and you reminded me of this during the pre-call, they've got 12 goals, 11 assists, 23 points of Evgeny Dadonov, who is still hurt at the moment. But, you know, you could argue that the version of the Stars that we're seeing right now still has upside.
Yeah, and the my question is, what happens with Dodonov when he's back? You could make an argument that he comes in on the right wing for Smith. I don't think you take a whole lot away from the scoring prowess if you do that. Dodonov, as many games as he's lost, I think he still has a handful more goals than Smith does.
Two more. Yeah, Smith has 10 goals, 9 assists, and the assist is a little bit. The thing about Dodonov though is he went through a pretty prolonged, if memory serves, it's been a while since he's played, but he was slumping at times, then he got hot, then he got hurt.
Dodonov unlike that line, and so I suppose you could make this as an argument to keep that line together. Dodonov has some crazy Ivan type passing that he ends up doing, and he needs some high level offensive guys to read off of him sometimes, and I'm not sure that you're going to get that with Foxa. You may get a little bit of it with Steele. But in some ways, his skill set doesn't match as well as Smith does to that fourth line.
Yeah, there are guys like that. It's funny, another random West gripe about the NHL. It's funny that when a guy's strange limitations make him good defensively, we're all okay with it because he's a defensive forward. But when a guy's strange limitations mean that he has to play with skill to play well, that's a problem, right? Like one of those things is okay and the other one is not. That's very strange to me.
Yeah, and it's kind of the opposite of Bork. Dodonov kind of pops off the screen with some of the stuff that he does. Bork, you have to pay a lot of attention to see all the interesting things that he does. And
yeah, what did you think of his debut? Let's go ahead.
It was kind of what I expected. He had a good shot at scoring a goal. I thought that he was good in his one-on-one battles. He needs to work on his face-offs, which is something that we've known going down to the AHL time.
Yeah, nobody comes into the NHL and succeeds on face-offs. That seems to be that's usually a season two or later thing.
Yeah, but I see him just easily sliding into any spot in this lineup that has a spot where he can get ice time, and that's what I would expect.
He played 10:56. Against Chicago, which you get right, given that's a score effect thing. They got down early, needed to lean on the big guns and debut. So I think that's pretty reasonable. Two shots on goal. I think you're right. I think to me, I thought he looked in a lot of ways very similar to my impressions when Logan Stankoven came up, and that is, he looked like he belonged. There didn't appear to be a lot of, catching up with the pace of play. He was creating chances, like you said. He probably could have scored a goal. You're right. I could easily envision him on any of the Stars lines, not getting into trouble.
Yeah. He's ready for an NHL job. The question is what job is going to become available for him.
Yeah. And I do think it's because of the roster, it's either going to be injury or it's going to be next season. I just think there's a lot of the thing about Bork that gets me the most excited is thinking about this team's salary structure, thinking about what they're going to be moving forward, him looking and playing like he did. And it was 10 minutes. So pump the brakes, Wes, but him looking and playing like he did means that this team isn't going to have to overspend in their roster. Right. It means that the, $2 million worth of whoever, instead of they can plug Bork in and not worry about taking a step backwards.
Yeah, I mean, to tell you the truth, if things work out the way I envision them working out, and nothing against Joe Pavelski, who's continued to put up some pretty incredible numbers, I think Bork's logical spot is to slot in on the first line on the right wing.
Yeah,
and I think his game combined with Robertson.
Oh my gosh!
I think that's a real good match because
he's the guy.
He's a creative guy who will make both those guys better.
Yeah, and he'll do a lot of the skate. He'll do a lot of the grunt work, right? He will.
Yep.
He can think with them. He can skill with them, and he can play in the corners and on the walls and do the things that let Hintz lead the rush and let Robertson play in space, right? He can kind of be. Bork can be the guy that fills it. But I think you're right. Like the important thing is he seems to be able, and his record history at the AHL level shows he can score enough to stick there because, it's, and I hate to slag on the guy, but it's sort of the Ty Dellandrea thing, right? Like you can look the part all you want, but you're going to have to produce to, you know, you can get the job, can you keep the job, right? So it's that, to me, it's going to be honestly the same. I would say the same thing about Mason Marchment, right? The challenge with Maverick Bourque is, will he do enough tangible things to keep him in a spot in the lineup where his intangibles really shine through, right? Does and tangible intangibles, maybe the wrong word. Will he put enough points on the board to justify a position with offensive players that will let him put enough points on the board, right?
Yeah, and the thing is, I think just the way that Robertson and Hintz process the game, I think Bourque is the perfect match for that. Where I don't think you see the same thing with Stankoven, who's much more of a volume shooter. You know, Stankoven works with Johnston and Ben because they have their own different things, and they can allow a volume shooter to thrive with what they do.
They need a bulldog. Bourque, yeah,
right. They do. They need a Bourque brings some things to the game where he can score enough so that he can take some pressure off of Robertson. But he's a good distributor of the puck, which allows Robertson to get open when the puck's not off on his stick. And he's also creative enough to be able to hit Hintz when he's on the move and anticipate where he's going.
Yeah, and I mean, you could see that meshing well in a world in which, and let's, you know, we'll talk some harsh truths here, but in a world in which Matt Duchene has played his way out of Dallas's salary structure, I think as well you could see Maverick Bourque sliding onto a line with Sagan and Marchment.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, if Duchene doesn't come back, that turns out to be the logical place for him.
And then you've got, because I think, you know, thinking of duos, right? It feels like Stankoven, you know, Ben obviously, while he's still productive, but I think long-term Stankoven and Johnston seem like they're going to be a pairing in the same way that Hintz and Robertson are. And so we're looking at who are the other, you know, teams tend to run in duos these days. Yep. So I think we're looking at who are the other pairings this team's going to see.
Yeah. And, you know, that's a weird one because, you know, we've talked a little bit in the past about the odd dynamics of that Marchment Sagan Duchene line and the sum is greater than the individual parts, and it's maybe even greater than the individual pairings.
Yep.
So interesting to see how that sorts out. I'm at the point where I hope that the team re-signs Duchene, and I hope it doesn't cost them an arm and a leg to do it. But if they don't do it, that I think is going to hurt more than we currently realize.
I think it will. It's just, you know, the challenge, right, is how much and how long. Yeah, and that's exactly. A discussion for after a postseason run and after the offseason, and we'll certainly get there. But I just think, yeah, it's a how much and how long.
Yeah. And, you know, it's kind of Jim Neal. And, you know, Jim Neal, if you're going to criticize him, you criticize him for slightly overpaying for veterans and maybe giving a little too much time on those contracts. And this might be one of those ones that I could get behind if that's what he's going to do.
Well, it's, you know, you come back to. You come back to Joe Pavelski, right? And he took a swing on Pavelski and it worked out. He took a swing on Ryan Suter. And, you know, I don't think it was a disaster by any stretch, but, you know, you've got a couple of different examples of Jim Neal doing that. And sometimes it's an amazing thing and other times it's not as amazing. And I think bringing him up, right? Like Joe Pavelski's intentions in future, you know, his price point, what is that going to be? That matters. Exactly how much fun has Matt Duchene had with the team? You know, that matters. But getting Bourque up and running, certainly, you know, we're a million here, a million there, right? It adds up.
Yeah. Well, you need the Bourque contracts to be able to afford the overpaid veteran contracts.
Because then you're getting into like territory. Well, what about Chris Tanev? You know, what are they going to do there? They're going to need it. And they'll probably bring Wedgwood back, but, you know, you'll need a backup goaltender next season. You know, Hakanpaa and Tanev are unrestricted, and then Harley's going to get a raise. Lundqvist is going to be restricted. They'll probably bring him back. You could use him even if he's your seven, if he'll come, depending on what happens in the playoffs.
And Steele will be back at a reasonable contract. Now that I think this is all manageable.
Yeah.
So the thing is with all these, you know, veteran contracts, you know that you're buying you're buying a good 2 years and you're going to overpay on the final 2 years. And you just made sure that you can sequence those final 2 years into a slot where they can, you know, yeah, they're overpaid, but they're still contributing to what the overall club wants to do. And that's kind of what we see now here with Ben and Sagan, where they're quite obviously getting overpaid for, you know, if you were signing a 1 year deal, you'd never come to that number. But they're still an integral part of what's going on with the Dallas Stars, and they're part of what makes this team great.
Yeah, it is. And the, again, right, Jamie Benn got one more year at 9.5. In 2025, 26, he's not a $9.5 million player. That helps your cap, right? Then Sagan, 2027, I know 2027 feels like a million years away, but we've talked about this before, right? Whenever somebody expires, whenever they need to pay somebody, right? The year after they have to pay Jason Robertson again, Sagan's gone, right? Or his current 9.8 cap hit is gone, and Ben's will be off the hook by then in Marchman. So they've got the space to bring it back. And to your point, right, I think it just comes down to, even if it's a mistake, you can have a limited number, and so far they haven't made any. So even if he turns out to be a mistake, you can, as long as you don't make a second mistake trying to fix the first mistake, you're probably okay. Where do we want to end this thing?
Let's end up with just a kind of a playoff prelim here.
Yeah, it's
last we saw we thought it was going to be Nashville for a while. Now it's kind of sequencing up where it might be Vegas as well. And who don't you want?
I think the big movement is with the win against Colorado last night. Certainly there's enough time left for something screwy to happen. But when we look at the division, right, Dallas has now pushed their lead to 5 points. Again, they're 7 points up on Winnipeg, but Winnipeg has a game in hand. They're 5 points up on Colorado, same games played. So that's, especially even before you get to the fact that they're 9-1, right? But Dallas has nothing is over, but they are certainly in the driver's seat for the division, which you're right. It looks like that trio of, you know, St. Louis probably isn't going to get over the hump. So it's going to be Nashville, Vegas, or Los Angeles look like they're going to be in that 8 slot. And all those teams, it's 92 points at the bottom with Vegas, 94 points at the top with Nashville. Now, Vegas has a couple games in hand, as does Los Angeles. So right now you probably want to be, I mean, it's 603 point percentage for the Predators, 604 for the Kings, 605 for the Knights. It's a pick 'em. I mean, honestly, and I may come to regret this, if I'm me, I want Vegas early, because they're going to have potentially some guys coming off the LTIR. They're going to have some growing, you know, I want to get them before they have a chance to figure things out, is my thinking. But I don't necessarily want any of the, I mean, God, they're even, Nashville's 6-4 in their last 10. Los Angeles is 7-3. Vegas is 7-2-1. I mean, all of them can kind of get at you. I think I'd rather have Vegas early, because if you wait to get Vegas late, there's a chance they might be really good.
Yeah. I'm going to go a different direction, I think. I think I want Nashville. And I want Nashville because Nashville is going to be the least physical series.
Yeah.
And I think physicality adds up over the duration of the playoff. And I think the Minnesota series last year took out a lot more than
yep.
we're willing to admit. And so I'm all in favor of not having to take the physical damage until you absolutely have to. Let the physical teams take each other out.
Yeah, there's logic in that too. And I'm always here for a Dallas-Nashville game that matters, right? Those are always fun and fond memories of Alex
Corey
Radulov.
Perry's walk of shame. And,
you know. Corey Perry, Alex Radulov, John Klingberg sending the Predators. So I watched that one in a hospital room watching my first daughter get, well, sequentially before my first daughter was born, but the same evening.
That was a good evening.
Yeah, it was a fantastic evening. But I don't know enough about Los Angeles. I'm not as familiar with the Kings this season. I know they were good early, then they got bad after that, and then they've rebounded a little bit. So I just they all present interesting problems, right? Talking about getting goalied, right?
Yep.
You don't necessarily want to line up against UC Soros in a situation where all he has to do is go crazy 4 times and you're in some trouble. But, you know, Vegas, you know, I think if we just look at roster talent, Vegas is the best team of that trio. but they may not have all of those pieces, and those pieces may not have played together a significant amount. You know, Los Angeles has some young legs, and they've got the goal differential, right? They're plus 39 right now. So I don't know. I stick with my answer. I'd rather get Vegas out of the way, because I think at some point you're going to have to play them, and yeah, it's going to be physical, but I'd rather do that early when everybody's healthy.
Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, I guess you throw Edmonton and Vegas against each other. You let the Kings try and deal with Vancouver, and the Stars play Nashville, and then Colorado and Winnipeg duke it out.
Yeah.
I think that's the way, if you're a Stars fan, you have to want it.
But I think the benefit is, if you're a Stars fan, I'm not afraid of any of those series.
I'm not either. I'm not either. But what I'm saying here, I guess, is that, you know, Colorado Winnipeg is going to be a war, and in this situation, Dallas is going to have to take on the team that comes out of that. So fine, let them fight.
Yeah.
But I'm also saying, if you're worried about Vegas getting knocked out knock them out early, then I say throw them up against Edmonton. That's really the Western Cup favorite if you follow the national stuff.
Yeah,
force that big Vegas team to try and keep up with that Edmonton team that can just fly. And one way or another, you want to get rid of one of those teams. You might as well have them take each other out and lose one along the way.
While Colorado and Winnipeg bang their heads against the walls in the other series.
Yeah, exactly. And then you take a look at, you know, the Kings in Vancouver is kind of an interesting matchup, because the Kings just have a longstanding success against the Canucks, and they'll put a physical toll on them.
Yeah,
you still have a heart of Kopitar and Doty out there, and that's a proud team that's had playoff success by being extremely physical, and they know how to do it.
Yeah, it'll be. I just want it to be the playoffs.
It's gonna be fun. I mean, yeah. In here, you know, really the major entertainment here for the hockey world, if you're a big hockey fan, is just watching the dumpster fire that's going on for the wild card in the East.
So. Yeah, nobody. They should just give that slot to, no, because then it'd be St. Louis and forget those guys. Babyton can stay home. So yeah, it'll be the Schmaz coming out of the East.
Let Washington get in there. I want to see Ovi play a little.
Yeah, I love it. There we go. Let Washington in. That's our official stargazing stance. Mark, anything else you want to hit on before we call it a night?
No, I think I'm good. I have to keep working here since all my bets didn't come out. So, yeah, let's stick to it.
We'll stick to it. There's still some games left to play. There's another, I believe they get Winnipeg one more time, but here's hoping the Stars finish strong. Oh, here's where we'll close it. Does Dallas win the President's Trophy?
I think New York will win it.
Yeah, it's the classic math. Like, if they'd have to get ahead of them, right? And yep, that's the challenge. It's hard with this few games to be, what, 3 points better? Or, sorry, 2 points better.
Yeah.
Chicago game hurt.
I'll throw this out there as well. You know, root for your Texas Stars. They're in deep, deep doo-doo. They made the playoffs, and they're going to play a play-in series probably against Manitoba, and they are outmanned and outgunned.
Yeah, no Stankoven.
Cross your fingers and hope they go well in the playoffs.
Love it. Love it. Well, as always, Mark, thank you for your insight. Thank you for your takery. KT, thank you for all of the hard work you do in the background and everything that you fix in post. This has been Stargazing, brought to you by Bet Online. Podcast over.